My personal definition of being a digital nomad is anybody who's nomadic, but a lot of their income comes from the digital world.
Welcome to the New Nomad Podcast, hosted by Alan and Andrew of Insured Nomads. Join us as Alan and Andrew interview and explore the community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Tune in to incredible discussions with thought leaders each week that will help you take full advantage of the cross-border remote work lifestyle. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the New Nomad. We have an interesting guest today. Eric Lachun will join us. He'll talk about the freedom lifestyle. He's been a digital nomad. He's a digital creative person. He's got somebody who's got a really interesting background. I was intrigued earlier when I was learning more about Erica's stoic thoughts, traveling reflections of an introvert. Really interesting. Also, routine and fitness go together. So we've got some interesting topics to cover today. But before we do, we'd love to bring in my co-host, Andrew Jernigan, who himself has been a new nomad. Andrew, how are you doing today? And what is on your mind?
Doing well. It's been a fun day in the life of those caring for those traveling around the world. I kind of hear my puppy in the background, and that's one of my therapy toys right now as a new puppy. You may hear him squealing in the background. That's what's on my mind at the moment because I can hear that sweet teddy bear.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Do you remember when we all first started with the Zoom and Microsoft Teams world, how horrified we were whenever there was a little noise that intervened, you know, a dog bark, a leaf blower, some noise in the background. And now here we are like a year later, unless it's a jet plane right over the top. It's kind of like, we've all been there to our location independent lifestyle people. I think we've all gotten a lot more flexible and understanding of the background noises and the things that many of us have to do. I mean, somebody doing conference calls from a cubby hole in a house because it's the only spot that they get some privacy. You know, Andrew, it's been quite a change.
It really has, at least when I think about it. It makes me get my inner world organized even more so that I can have the outer world, these conversations flow well. Because there are things you can't control, but the things you can control is what's in your mind and how you operate on a daily basis. So I really think Eric's going to bring some perspective into that today.
Well,
looking forward to having him join us.
Me too. And one of the things we could control is bring Eric into the conversation. Eric, welcome. First off, where are you at today? And we'd love to hear about how you started on this freedom lifestyle path and maybe share some thoughts with others.
Well, today, guys, thank you for having me here. I'm glad to be here. I'm in Denver, Colorado right now in the US of A, the good old USA. And my journey started probably in 2013. It was kind of random because I was going to college at the time to be a personal trainer. At the time, you know, I was a DJ and I was a security guard. So I was kind of doing that thing. And I decided to get a job at the airport, and it was working for an airline. And out of 200 people, I got the job. And then when I started using these travel benefits, you know, I hadn't been to many places before. I mean, I was traveling since I was a kid, but I had the opportunity to go overseas, you know, to see all the world, you know, on a dime of an airline. And that's where it pretty much started. Now, I worked for this airline for about 8 years, and that was where the seed was planted for me.
Let me ask you this. We have a lot of people who've traveled a bit. It sounds like you went on a real traveling extravaganza on that. So in that 8 years, you must have gone from kind of a traveler, like what do I kind of bring in my suitcase, to probably by the end of it, you knew exactly what you were bringing, what you were doing, et cetera. You did the research, you know, you would show up in a new place prepared. Share a little bit about that. I mean, how would you make sure you stayed healthy and then you knew what you wanted to do when you got there?
Well, that's where the routine had started. Pretty much, it's like with anything, repetition. The more I travel, the more I started to discover and start to figure out tips. But that's where I figured out that routine is probably needed, because when you're traveling all the time, it's hard to stay in a routine, you know. And honestly, I met other digital nomads, and that's where I kind of discovered the lifestyle. And then, you know, I wanted to progress this thing, like how could I travel more, you know, without using the airline? And that's how I got into being a digital nomad. But I honestly got burnt out from the fast traveling. Then I was like, you know what? I think every digital nomad goes through this. You know, I want to slow down a little bit. And I want to just kind of just get a little bit more experience. And that's when I decided you need routine. And the way fitness comes in this is like a lot of the times, you know, on the digital nomad journey, people are always constantly working, but they need it just to fund the lifestyle. You know, without the funds, you can't live the dream of traveling.
When you refer to digital nomad, some people listening today have no clue what that means. They've joined this podcast because they are new to remote work. They've joined it because they're like, okay, I'm an expat, but what is this digital nomad thing they keep talking about? And they may be hearing it thinking, I should Google it. When you say you decided to become a digital nomad and you've got some great writings on it on Medium and other places, can you tell us how you personally think that is defined?
My personal definition of being a digital nomad is anybody who's nomadic, but a lot of their income comes from the digital world, pretty much like the laptop. Now, you see a lot of the memes with people working on the beach, you know, on their laptops. It's not possible, but it looks cool. You know, it's kind of like of a lifestyle thing. They're trying to sell people the dream. But to me, that's my personal definition of a digital nomad, anybody who's able to make income digitally.
So you could be in Denver, Colorado, and from Florida, and you're a digital nomad because you can be working from your computer, but decide to live in the mountains.
Correct. And that's where the freedom comes in.
Right. So it's not necessarily leaving your home country. It's about making money using the laptop, your smartphone, and having the choice to go, whether or not you go or not.
Exactly. See, that's where the freedom comes in. The freedom to spend time with loved ones, the freedom to create your own schedule. And that's where the freedom comes in as far as being a digital nomad. And like that term is becoming more popular, especially with the pandemic, because people are staying home. So people are Googling and this term probably comes up. But like I said earlier, that image of somebody on a beach is usually what's in people's minds. Now, I got a funny story. So I was talking to this 21-year-old. I guess they would be considered millennials.
Yep.
And I had thrown out around the term the digital nomad. And they verbatim said to me, oh, yeah, those are the people who sit on their butts all day and don't do anything. So that told me that's the perception of a digital nomad, you know, and I didn't go into it anymore because I knew they didn't know any better. But I think that is the perception that's kind of floating out there of a digital nomad.
It's interesting because the digital nomads, the remote workers, the location independent people that we run into are very industrious. I mean, it takes a lot of energy to do something different. And you actually had a really interesting blog post that you talk about creative ways to make money online, and you had writing, drop shipping, Forex, royalties, and really kind of went into a couple different areas there. And I mean, I was really interested in, like, for instance, drop shipping was something I hadn't really gone into. Do you have any tips for people who want to make money, you know, obviously by using their computer so they have that type of flexibility? And to your point, it's not like you can sit on the beach and just have funds roll in.
If it were that easy, right? Everybody would be doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would tell anybody who wants to live this lifestyle, don't quit your 9-to-5 just yet. The goal is to develop some skills. But the thing is, people, they have this limited perception of what you can do online. And so they think all of the tech world or something similar like that. But the options are limitless. Like, I've made money, or still making money on Twitter, all because of a 16-year-old told me how to make money on Twitter through affiliate marketing. Like, I had no idea you can make money on Twitter. You know, and those are just one of the examples that you can make money. I would say first, do your research. 2, find out what you're good at. And then 3, you have to be really, really creative because the options are limitless. Don't just think you can, there's just one way to make money, but it will take time.
So tell me, you've done this and you coach other people in doing it. What are some of the ways that you can keep your body and your mind in check when living this lifestyle? Because I know it's a temptation to just go from 7 in the morning to 9 at night, working away, getting one more Upwork client, getting one more blog post written, whatever it is that, as people are listening, thinking that's how I've got to keep my income coming in. You can waste it all away being in a great city, a new country, and be tearing your body and your mind apart. What do you say to that? Because I've seen some writings of yours that really give some good insights.
You know, it's happened to me. A lot of this is through trial and error, obviously. You know, like you said, you go to a great city, you know, and you spend so much time seeing the city, and all of a sudden you start going out every weekend and it's like you're living like you're in college again. Like, it's your big part of some fraternity, like a frat house style, like lifestyle. So what I would say to that is start slow, developing a routine, because like you can't just go cold turkey all of a sudden and then just start, you have to start developing slow. Like, just, I would say, implement daily routines every day and then build on them. Just one thing at a time, because it's really, really hard to just to do something right away, because you'll be motivated the first 3-4 days. That motivation is going to go away. And all of a sudden you're going to, I guess you would say, you will relapse again. So I would say just start slowly, just implement something. The fitness side of it, like, you're not going to maintain this lifestyle if you don't take care of yourself, you know, and who wants to get unhealthy, especially if you're traveling overseas a lot. So I would recommend people to take care of their body. And the good thing is, when we're not in the US, their food is so much better. Like, I can't tell you how many times that I felt so much better when I'm outside of the US eating another country's food, and I come back to the US and all of a sudden my stomach is like, what are you feeding me? And all of a sudden I might get sick. So, you know, we have the ability and opportunity to better our health and our nutrition when we're traveling overseas.
You know, Eric, it brings up a story that I had. Is I visited Ukraine many years back and was with an expatriate who had moved from the United States there. And he mentioned to me that in the US, he had a lot of issues with food disorder and digestion, et cetera. And then once he got to Ukraine, that never happened again. And we kind of discussed, you know, there's no preservatives in the food in Ukraine. You buy a loaf of bread, it's going to be moldy in about 3 days. People don't let it sit 3 days. Or even the beer is not mass produced. It's more like a microbrewery here. And he said it was an incredible change for him. And I think that's really a unique thing that you said about the food outside the United States tends not to have a lot of the extra additives that we seem to put into our food. And I just thought it was really unique because he had Crohn's disease, which is not an easy thing. And he said it really abated when he started to eat nutritious and healthy foods and left an environment where the foods are overproduced, which kind of leads me to the next question that, you know, you suggest some supplements and you do some things. And obviously you were in a personal trainer in the past. Obviously we've heard so much about anti-inflammatory foods and things that keep you healthy. Do you have a couple go-to foods? And we could share some thoughts on that.
One of my go-to is turmeric and sea moss. Now, the sea moss, you know, it's probably one of the healthiest things you can take. Like, our bodies, no matter how much food we eat, we don't get enough nutrients. And the sea moss tends to supplement that a lot. You know, but I think you have to get it online. You can't just go in the store and buy it, from what I know of. You may can get it overseas, but from personal experience, you can get it online. And the turmeric, like for me, I'm 40 years old, but, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm 60 because of I used to be a former athlete, and I can feel like my shoulders, my bones, and my tendons start to hurt sometimes for all the weightlifting and all of the, you know, the things I did in high school as far as sports. But that usually supplements and hurt, you know, it makes the pain go away sometimes.
It's interesting you being there, because I do love turmeric and ginger,
yeah,
cinnamon, blueberries, and, you know, anti-inflammatory foods. And I play a lot of competitive sports and mountain bike, and CBD has been something I've added to the collection, yeah, recently, also to help out. But overseas, it tends not to be that aggressive. It tends to be slow travel, but with tons of walking. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, 30,000 steps, and you really want to follow with that. So sea moss, I will look into that.
But yeah, check it out.
Yeah, it's something that seems really interesting to check online. And then some of the unique foods that you might get out there, like acai or other things. I mean, some of the fruits and vegetables that you see overseas that you don't get here, perhaps.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that Ethiopia, like when I was in Africa, like a lot of their foods, like their meat is some of like the best meat in the world. It's not like the meat back in the States. Like our meat in the U.S. obviously has all the chemicals in it. And like I said, your digestive system recognizes this. When you eat like real food without the GMOs, and then you eat food with the GMOs, it's like night and day.
It is, you know, and so many times we're not aware of the processed foods we're getting. We're not aware of how we need to be listening to our body. You're saying some things that may be, you know, those wake up calls for the listeners right now of whether you're traveling or not, we need to be listening to our body. Need to be getting up, moving more. We need to be watching what we put in. And I think an easy way of watching what we put into our body is watching what we can put out, you know, our outtake, our efficiency, our pep, you know, at, you know, just how we live our lives in this world is crucial to what we take in, what we take in our mind, what we take in our mouth, and what we take in that motivates us.
Deep thoughts, Andrew. I think you've rendered both of us speechless here. I'll try to bring a little bit of closure to that thought. Is when I deal with a lot of people who travel a lot, the issue that they run into is, you know, you've flown on a long flight, you had coffee, tea, alcohol, and you're very dehydrated. And a dehydrated environment continues, and that saps some energy too. I'm just amazed how often I hear from people that they got off a plane and they just don't feel good for 48 hours. And I'm like, well, how many drinks did you have that dehydrating environment? So maybe a quick conversation about what you brought up earlier, I thought was great. You mentioned, you know, people hit the ground kind of running, but you were alluding to now that you're doing a little more slow travel. And I know this is something that Andrew and I very much endorse, to go to a place and experience it for a while. So you've traveled about, are there some places that you would highly recommend that people, you know, explore deeper, that are cities, places that you felt were just tremendous for slow travel between food and history and all the wonderful things that you can learn?
I would say Japan. You know, we can't travel there at the moment, but when they open up, I would definitely recommend Japan, and only because we're introverts. And for me as an introvert, it was a place or a city that I could be an introvert. Like America, you know, they reward, extroverted behavior is rewarded, you know, because if you're this person who talks a lot, you know, it's always mistaken for being confident. And if you don't talk a lot, you're not confident. But in Japan, it's almost rude just to have a random conversation. But in America, it's endorsed. And Japan is one of those places where you could actually be into your thoughts. And that's where I got the idea of the traveling reflections of an introvert, because you actually get to be in your thoughts and kind of just get clarity on things. And I think a lot of nomads sometimes, even though they are by themselves, they can get caught up in the work and the lifestyle without just kind of just go put some roots down, get clarity on your life and what your next move is. And I think everybody can improve on that, especially for mental health.
I love traveling with an introvert. They point out things that I wouldn't see.
Yeah.
Slow me down to actually enjoy a whole lot more than racing around to conquer as much as I can see. I've got to be slowed down quite a bit usually because my nature is to go too fast. How about you, Alan?
I think it's really interesting. I think if you travel with a diverse group, when I did my best traveling, there was two other gentlemen that I traveled with. This was in the corporate world. We worked together. We tried to do our trips together. I was the history guy, extrovert. Then there was an introvert who always took us to the best restaurants. Somebody who was kind of in the middle, who planned out a wonderful like day of seeing, you know, what has is in that city. And I always appreciated not only the extrovert versus the introvert, but also the people that have different interests, but we all, you know, bring something to the table. And one of the places we did that, I remember we went to Krakow, Poland, and had the best pierogies I've ever had. That was found by one. We went to the castle, who was found by another. And then we explored the Jewish quarter, which was by a different one. And we said to each other, this was one of the greatest days we've ever had. So, Eric, to your point about being people recognizing different things, have most of your travels been by yourself or with others? And when it's by yourself, is it natural to explore differently?
Yeah, I've had a few trips where I've brought some friends along. A lot of the time, people are scared to come, you know, because they hear horror stories about a particular country. But majority of my travels have been solo. But I noticed when I did bring some friends along, I had to adjust, you know, some things because they were the complete opposite of my personality. And I didn't take in consideration of what their experience would be, you know, because you spend so much time traveling by yourself, you almost forget what it's like to travel with other people, and you kind of forget or tend to forget about other people's needs sometimes. So it was a learning experience that, you know, maybe solo traveling is fine and it's cool, but it's good to, you know, bring other people along, especially for that human connection.
The thing that I had trouble when I traveled with people, you kind of know right away if you're with a good travel partner or this is going to be a long trip, right? For me, the big indicator was just people that I knew it was going to be a good trip if they were just willing to put themselves out there. Let's not stay in the hotel to 10 a.m. in the morning and have a big breakfast and then run back to the hotel at 6 at 8. Let's see everything, but let's do it at a nice, easy pace. Stop for a cup of coffee, go to a museum. I mean, you can kind of tell right away who's on it, but if they aren't, you still change, right? A little bit. As an introvert, did that mean that you also did a lot more research? I mean, some of us extroverts, frankly, come off, we're ready, fire, aim, instead of ready, aim, fire sometimes. You must have done extra research and know where you're headed before you got there.
Oh, yeah. That's all I did was research. And, you know, a lot of my friends, they were extroverts, you know, but a lot of times they didn't necessarily trust me. It's not they didn't trust me. They just didn't trust, you know, the newness to traveling or whatever country they were in. And, you know, and I'd been to a particular country that we would go to numerous times. So I would have everything planned out. And I would tell them, you know, we have to catch this train or, you know, we have to go to this area. And you could see they were kind of just terrified about it. And then it would be followed by like 30 questions. Well, what about this? How do you know if this is going to be over there? What if this happens?
I've got a question for you, Eric.
Yeah,
that is, you know, you've seen a lot. I heard you talk about Ethiopia, you know, you've got Dubai, you've got all these different places that you've hit. You've got some great experiences. This is a broad question. We ask it to everybody that comes on our show. So I'm eager to hear your response. What's the one overlooked person, place, or experience that you feel like the listeners should know about?
You know, I will bring up Ethiopia. Ethiopia, Africa. I think that's a place that should be visited. It's a booming economy. The thing is with Africa, it has this negative perception that it's a bunch of poor children, you know, and there's like no booming economy, but that's far from the truth. You know, you see these things on TV, but once you get over there, it's like night and day. Ethiopia is actually building one of the biggest towers in the world right now. I think it's called the Mesop Tower, you know, and it's kind of a shrine, a cultural thing to the Ethiopian culture, but they're actually in talks to build it because they want to boost the tourism, because I think they're aware that the perception from the world isn't probably the greatest because of the media, but I think that's a place people should probably definitely visit. It's overlooked. I think a lot of nomads should definitely check it out.
And what a place with an incredible history to follow. Eric, this has been great. We covered a lot. Where can people learn more about you? Tell them a little bit about your blog as people try to explore more and get more advice, counsel, and reach out to you.
Everyone can go to my blog, ericlashon.com, and I'll spell the Lashon, LASHUN.com. You can go there and check out my blog. You can also contact me on Instagram through Twitter, just at ericlashon.com. I'm just at ericlashon.
Fantastic. We appreciate you taking the time to join us today. I've certainly learned a lot. And frankly, I will search out the sea moss. You know,
yeah, let me know how that works. It's good stuff.
I trust it will work very well on things. Andrew, you know, like I said, as we tie things together, learned a lot today. What's your reflections on today's conversation?
I want to go to Ethiopia.
Check it out, man. It's a hidden gem.
I've had some great Ethiopian food.
Oh, the food's delicious.
Yes, it's healthy too, because a lot of it is vegetarian.
Yep.
We need to eliminate a lot of meat from our life, even though I'm traditionally a meat eater, even though I shouldn't be. Ethiopia needs to hit the top of my list. It's a really safe place.
Yes.
To travel, just for those who are thinking, Ethiopia, should that go on your list? Yes, it should. It's a very friendly culture. And so get it on your list, folks.
Yeah, check it out, man. You trust me, you'll love it.
Well, and it's interesting, Andrew, and we've had a common theme through our podcast is, you know, I believe a lot of people are afraid of visiting Africa, just like they were afraid of visiting Asia. And when we talk to our, you know, location independent lifestyle folks, you hear of many great places and, you know, with the right understanding, people should explore these places. And that's why I really love that we always ask the overlooked person, place, or experience question on things. So great conversation today. Just want to thank you for listening. The New Nomad's not just a podcast. It's a community of people, ideas, and spirits helping you take advantage of the location independent lifestyle. We look forward to hearing from you again. Travel well and stay safe. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for tuning in to the New Nomad Podcast, where we bring together an incredible community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Please remember to subscribe and leave a review. For more amazing tips to help you take advantage of the cross-border lifestyle, please visit us at insurednomads.com/podcast. See you next week.